This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Now your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Major General Kevin Kennedy, the Assistant Deputy Chief Information Officer for Digital Transformation at the Air Force. Major General Kennedy, welcome to the discussion.
Good morning, Jason. Thank you for having me.
We're talking today about a big project that is the Air Force ahead of obviously most agencies in, called Enterprise IT as a Service. This is something that we're seeing a lot of, if you will, focus and excitement around how to change the way, not just the DoD, but really I think agencies at large are looking at the way they manage their IT resources, their hardware, their software, even to some extent their people. So let me start with, what is your role with Enterprise IT as a Service, and what are your kind of focus areas?
My role is as the Director of Digital Transformation and the Assistant Deputy Chief Information Officer. I provide the headquarters Air Force level oversight of the activity and ensure that the coordination across the Air Force happens to roll out Enterprise Information Technology as a Service, or EIT as a Service. And in that role, I handle the costing, the forecasting for our budgeting, and also the strategy and the vision of where we want to take the initiative. We're closely partnered with Air Combat Command just down the street at Langley Air Force Base, and also with our acquisition professionals up at Hanscom Air Force Base are the key other teammates that we have in rolling this out. And so what I do in there is I look across the portfolios and to make sure of how we're going to essentially provide information technology to our airmen in the Space Force and in the Air Force to make sure that we're ready to accomplish the mission. I'm also dual-hatted on the headquarters Air Force staff over in the A26. I'm also the Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff for Cyber Effects Operations. In that role, I'm thinking more about how we're going to leverage the network that we're fielding, leverage information technology and the capabilities and applications it supports in warfighter communications and in cyber effects operations. So when the Air Force's perspective on offensive cyber operations and defensive cyber operations, I also bring that perspective to my job.
When you deal with the forecasting of budget, of strategy, of vision, Enterprise IT as a Service is very interesting because this is not one of those things where you guys are saying, okay, let's just move to email in the cloud, or let's pick up these applications and put them over here. It's actually an experiment in many ways, a proof of concept. Can you talk about how the strategy, the vision, the budgeting kind of deals with the fact that this in many ways is an experiment?
We are in a risk reduction phase right now. And what we're looking at doing there is understanding how do we procure information technology with the capabilities, modern 21st century tools, in a way that leverages industry's speed of delivery and innovation, leverages the innovation we have inside the service, and also takes best advantage of the military and civilian airmen that we have working in the field. And so about 5 to 10 years ago, in that time frame, as information technology became more than just email, and as the service came to recognition that the way we collaborate and share information is going to become even more critical to our operation. It was always a key element in warfighting, but as we go forward, we see that the availability of information and the ability to communicate at speeds and with more resiliency is going to become even more of a dimension of future warfare. So as the CIO, we look toward and say, how do we provide that for the force? And we figured that what we needed now had been largely under-resourced, and we had accepted risk there as we had gone through various budgeting cycles to make sure that we had the lethality and the fielding of the systems that we needed to fight and win our nation's wars. Now, as we're going forward, we see those wars changing slightly. We still have a need for to have a high-end force with some significant kinetic capabilities, but we also have to think through how those non-kinetic capabilities integrate, and a lot of them that do leverage our information technology and our networks. And also, how do we enable command and control and joint all domain command and control in a way that would enable that speed of decision that the future of warfare is going to require? When we look at that from that perspective, we decided that the way we were providing it right now wasn't necessarily keeping up with the pace that industry could provide it. And we didn't want to necessarily have industry just come in and do a traditional acquisition of, we set very definitive requirements for so many users at so much time with so much capabilities, and then procure, set out a contract that then puts folks in seats to do that type of activity. What we wanted is to consume it as a service. So as the industry model changes, we can also pivot. and as we can consume it at the number and tailor it to the wing that we're supporting. And so that's truly what we're looking at as we're moving forward. And so when we're thinking through that, there's a few things that we needed as we're in this experiment that we're focusing on. And really the first one that I'd like to emphasize is we're looking at the maturity level of what that capability is that we're fielding. So as we're fielding a capability and across the portfolio, we want to make sure that the solution that industry can provide is mature enough to meet the rigors and resilience that we need for our force. The other part, this is a very big shift in the way you approach security on our network. And really, we're looking to how we enable a pivot from boundary defense more towards data-centric defense and more towards a zero-trust approach. And so that's a heavy engagement with our industry partners and with 16th Air Force and U.S. Cyber Command. And just to understand how do we do that and move forward. The other part of it is information technology is absolutely vital to our airmen getting their mission done. It's a time consideration, but it's also how do they get access to the information so they can turn aircraft, fly satellites, make sure our airmen are well-trained and prepared to fight and win. And so we need to think through how the actual information technology is performing. So that's one of the other key things that we're looking at measuring is how do we gauge the performance of our information technology. And the other last one, as in most things, we have to make sure we're getting return on investment for the taxpayer and that the solution is affordable. The way that we model and cost this has to be laser focused on getting the most value that we can out of the dollars that we spend and understanding how we can move those that spend, whether it's at wing level or at corporate Air Force level, or whether what the capability we provide is tailored for the airmen for what they need. They have the capabilities they need, but we don't necessarily procure one size fits all across the force.
I want to go back to one thing you just said about affordability and cost model. This concept of as a service is not necessarily new. The concept, the broad concept. We've seen it over the years as alternative service providers. We've seen it over the years as seat management. We've seen it over the years as the COCO model, right? Contractor-owned, contractor-operated, or the government-owned, contractor-operated model, NMCI. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Is that the piece here of why enterprise IT as a service is also different? Because a lot of those previous attempts maybe weren't affordable or they weren't as the model just maybe didn't jive well with what the needs of the agency was. But now with the technology changing and the cloud, that's why this model potentially has a more likelihood of succeeding.
There's a lot of truth in that question is, where the technology has come and where what the cloud enables us to do, I think does enable less of a capital investment potentially into information technology services, numbers of data centers and things like that. We can think differently about it. But I want to emphasize too, this isn't necessarily a cost savings. I mean, there's two challenges that the Air Force asked us to look at. One of them was a capability improvement that the information technology speed and resilience of it needed to improve. And the other part was they wanted the most modern, is a modernization aspect, the most modern kind of capabilities that were out there. And so where we are on the model is understanding what do we need to have built in acquisition roles that incentivizes the right behavior. So I think a lot of our risk reduction effort is also looking at how do we write contracts in a way that don't disincentivize the outcomes that we're looking for. And sometimes that our industry partners, are executing the contract vehicle we put forward to them. And we want to make sure that those are structured in a way that doesn't necessarily have undetermined second and third order effects. The other part of it is we need to make sure that we want to not have a vendor lock situation as we're going in. We want to make sure that our data is mobile. It's portable. If we need to go a different way, we can. And we see in the as a service model and as we consume it, that gives us a lot of flexibility as we're going forward there. So I think those are the two reasons why, now is a little different in time. But I think your insight about the cloud maturity and our ability to leverage that, I think that does give us some opportunities that we didn't have before because of the capital investment.
It's actually a great segue. Some of the benefits, some of the metrics of success that you're seeing, it seems to be the vendor lock-in, the data mobility, the as-a-service model. Those are both the benefits, but also some of the metrics you're paying close attention to. Are there others that you want to highlight?
There's the kind of mission readiness metrics that we look at, which is one of at the core is how do our airmen perceive their information technology and is it supporting their mission? So we see this as a readiness issue, and that's one of the things that we're capturing with a pretty robust, from my experience in the Air Force, regime of surveying our airmen as they're out there consuming across the Air Force networks and as well as at the risk reduction bases. So that's one of the other things that we're specifically capturing in this exercise. And then, no, not necessarily a metric. One of the things also during risk reduction is the lessons learned on the execution side of the house with respect to the acquisition vehicles that we are going to roll out as we look to go to production in 22 and 23, as we look to change from our risk reduction effort to whatever our production vehicle and how that, that enterprise is going to look. And then also we need to look through of how the security CONOPS development is another metric, the maturity model of that, of how we do incident response, where the lines between industry and AppCyber are to make sure that we have the ability to continue to maneuver and when necessary, take action on our networks if adversaries are inside and trying to access our data or prevent operation of our network.
When you talk about capturing the surveying your the airmen and understand both across the networks and at risk reduction basis, can you talk a little bit more about how that survey works and maybe even just at a high level, some of the things you're learning from those airmen?
It's the first time I've seen this rolled out in my career in the past 30 years, but it's I think it's a survey that most of your listeners would be familiar with. It's it, as you're on working on the network, it's a series of questions that ask you, you know, satisfaction level with the network and if, you know, kind of a question tree that leads you down a path if there is. And then the places where we really like to mine to kind of get a sense is the free response. And so when we look through this free response, we're looking for, you know, how many times things are mentioned and how many times the, you know, in a positive or negative manner. Most of the time, the folks that take, the, you know, there are folks that like to, our airmen like to come out and highlight a lot of the positive things in their comments, but there also is a, that's where we find the real pain points usually come out in those comments to understand where we are in our network. And what we were finding is the way in the past decades, the way we've constructed the AFNET has been successful in many ways, but it also has created a non-efficient transactional path in some ways, just as different capabilities and as we cobbled together different parts of the network to form the AFNET. It's always continually improving in our cyber capability center in the lead with Air Combat Command and others helping us get there. But that's one of the things that we determined from the network, from those responses and enabled us to really look at some of the pain points, slow access to email, slow access to information in our Office 365 environment. And then recently, we've gone through and simplified that transactional path within the Air Force. For some of our airmen, it was 48 potential steps to get in and back from there with their information. We were able to bring that down to 20 to 25, depending on how you're accessing the network and what information you were trying to use. So that was one of the things that the survey helped us identify. The other part of that, in that, as we continue to look through that transactional path and focus on our airmen and their ability to leverage the network on and influence their readiness, was the end user devices that they were using and truly understanding if the if our tech refresh rates were keeping up with the capabilities that we were also looking to explore and the kind of tools that we're using in the cloud. And so that was one of the other things that we highlighted, that as we do our follow-on tech refreshes to look at what are the baseline capabilities that we want in our tablets or our laptops or our desktops. And so that was another one of the positive outcomes.
Let's take a quick break. My guest today is Major General Kevin Kennedy, the Air Force Assistant Deputy CIO for Digital Transformation. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Major General Kevin Kennedy, the Air Force's Assistant Deputy CIO for Digital Transformation.
As you guys have rolled out Enterprise IT as a service, there's obviously a lot of things that are happening at once. I think you guys have three or four different proofs of concepts, three at the risk reduction basis, and then you're working with some other agencies, whether it's on the user desktop management side or even with Google looking at potential move to zero trust. Give me a sense of what are some of those broad challenges you faced and how has the coronavirus pandemic, if at all, added to those challenges or impacted the program?
Some of the broad challenges of moving towards an ITAS environment is just the cultural change is the first one. The technology, I think industry and the Air Force, we understand where we need to take the enterprise to enable us to consume network as a service, for example, with our two primary partners there being AT&T and Microsoft. And so we understood that. I think the technological solution was understood, though not simple. It says you enable Air Force information to leave an Air Force base area network into an AT&T or Microsoft network, and we're still in the, you know, still in the early stages of doing that up to full capacity, although just on May 29th, we were able to approve both Offutt Air Force Base and Buckley Air Force Base to go from a 10% capacity on their network as a service up to up toward 100% capacity, that throttle being guided by 16th Air Force down at AFCYBER. So that was one of the things as we're looking through that is like, what's the cultural transformation that we had to think through? The other part is, as you would expect, is there is a stakeholder engagement piece that we needed to really focus on between industry, the base level, airmen that are working toward this new way of information technology, as well as at the headquarters level and the MAGCOM level to make sure that all of the stakeholders across the environment understand what we're trying to do. The key here, to go back to the costing, is we are looking to provide services at an enterprise level and cost and resource them there, where previously may have been the requirement of the MAGCOMs, the major commands in the United States Air Force, to do that. With that would come some expectation that the resourcing will also move to headquarters. And with that comes the responsibility for the headquarters to make sure the major commands understand what we're doing with those resources and are fully involved in those decision making. So it's the governance model that we're employing is an incredibly significant part. As far as over the last couple of months now with the coronavirus response, what we found is our industry partners were able to continue moving along on many, if not all, of the lines of effort as we're going forward. Obviously, some of the mobility requirements across the nation as far as folks physically moving was limited. So some of the activities may have taken a little longer timeline, but we think we can make that up in schedule as we move forward. But it's something that we're monitoring. But the folks that were already rolled out capabilities, for example, at Buckley Air Force Base, the networking, the base area networking support that AT&T was providing there, was able to come into this new environment and help the base think through how they provide virtual private network access in different places that weren't on the base before and roll that out. Also, how to provide extended Cipronet classified networking into other spaces to help with dispersing around the base. And so we decrease density or make it possible to work from a remote station across the base as we're going there. And additionally, SAIC, who's leading one of our efforts as far as our service desk responses for IT SM function, stayed up and running fully through that and helped us quite a bit with the Buckley Air Force Base on their virtual private network responses. So what we saw during the pandemic, industry was able to continue to provide the services, much like we saw industry providing an incredible amount of telecom support to the nation. Our partners in ITAS were able to do the same for our bases.
You mentioned the Offutt and Buckley Air Force Bases basically going from 10% to about 100% or close to a capacity for network as a service. What does that mean? Break that down maybe to the next level about, is it just better, faster capabilities, more capabilities? Help me understand.
What we're trying to see there is how we can leverage a different transactional path with different security devices that will enable us to leverage their network security, to see if that does help with the user, our airmen, as they're leveraging information technology, if they see that access. And where we think we will see that first is the Air Force is pretty close to wholly in an Office 365 based, cloud-based environment for our collaboration tools. And that's where we're really focusing on is as our airmen use those tools to perform their missions and basic collaboration with email teams and the like, we are looking to see if we're leveraging their networks, their cloud access point, different internet access point versus the ones on the DOTEM transactional path, to see if there's a difference and also make sure that we're comfortable with the security on that path as we're transitioning along. So that's what we expect. That's how we expect that to see that difference in speed of function, as well as increased collaboration capabilities.
Okay, that's helpful to understand, because when I hear, obviously, network as a service, oh, they're all on, but you're looking for maybe almost a slice of it in some ways, and it's a security focused. Walk me through, if we have this conversation in a year from now, in 5 years from now, the future network of the Air Force, what will it look like? What will it mean?
In a year from now, our expectation is to be in a place that we have the planning and the waterfall as we're going to have the strategies in place to roll ITAS across the force. It won't be in the entire Air and Space Force. Not every member of both services will have that, but we're looking to have our planning and our acquisition strategy well aligned, our manning strategy well aligned, and our cost strategy well aligned. And so from a year from now, that's sounds like a heavy lift, and it is, but that's where we're looking to be in a year as we're going. 5 years from now, we look to have what we're going to have for capability as in an as-a-service model fully up and running. We are still in risk reduction, and so we have to understand as we look at our lines of efforts with this compute and store, network as a service, and user services as a service, of what capabilities that we do continue as a service model, and what we find that for whatever reasons, whether it be the acquisition, the cost model, or the capability wasn't able to close on that, then we'll be able to roll that out to the force. But I don't want to leave your listeners with the impression that it's going to be all lines of effort, all fully as a service. We're still very much have an open mind about how we're going to be able to provide the capabilities. But the bottom line is that our major commands and their leadership, the lieutenant generals and generals that lead those commands, have challenged the CIO and the air staff to provide a capability that enables mission readiness for the future of the 21st century's fight. And what we find there is that we're going to have to field and resource 21st century capabilities to do that. And that is what the CIO is focused on. And 5 years from now, those capabilities should be across this Air Force and the Space Force.
There's a similar effort going on at the Army. We know that the Navy has been down paths with NMCI, now NGEN. I'm sure there's the Fourth Estate that's working on very similar consolidation efforts. Walk me through how you all are working with those other services and sharing those lessons you've learned and pulling in their lessons learned. How's that communication happening?
Absolutely partnering, looking across the department for lessons learned. And as we constructed our as-a-service approach to this, one of our first conversations was with the Navy to understand what they felt that was well executed and what they felt they would change if they had to go back and do it again. And as you mentioned, we have a new model that wasn't necessarily allowed when the Navy started this. Also, one of the key points was looking at how they rolled out their change management, how they rolled out across their workforce. All of those lessons from the Navy, we took them on board and are making sure that we're paying attention to them as we move forward. With the Army has partnered extremely closely with us and has their own partnered initiative, slightly different approach, but they are working with us. And to the point of that, the Army has embedded liaison officers with our office, with our integrated program office up at Hanscom, and to make sure that we stay well aligned as we're going forward. And to enable the collaboration and coordination across the department, we have provided occasional updates to DoD CIO. We also have a couple, every other month or so, we get together with DISA just to make sure, and the Army and the Air Force, to make sure that we are understanding where we are and to see if there's any friction points that we need to work through as far as coordinating some of the technological solutions or some of the policies across between Air Force, DoD CIO, and DISA to make sure that we're moving out. One of the things the Air Force that we signed up with DoD CIO is, as we looked at our security requirements, the commercial solution needs to be equivalent or better. And that's one of the things that we're holding very fast to as we go forward. And the other mechanism that we do to ensure that is internal to the Air Force is we have operational readiness reviews as we roll out key capabilities. And one of the very significant discussions that we have during those reviews is the security posture as we're moving forward. But that is that's how we're looking to stay synced across the department and transparent. And like you mentioned, our key partners there, DISA, DoD CIO, U.S. Cyber Command, and the U.S. Army.
When you work with the Army or when you work with the other agencies, are they, if you will, on the floor with you? It's not a watch floor like we have with cybersecurity, but are they, or is it through these meetings that you tend to kind of catch up each other on progress and challenges and potholes to avoid?
The primary mechanism is the Army is inside of our integrated program office, and we're also working with DISA to have a field office at DISA for Enterprise IT as a service up at Fort Meade, and whether have a dedicated person that's identified there that's going to be an Air Force representative through that. So that's one of the things that we came out with from our last integration meeting with DISA, and we rogered up that we wanted to provide that connectivity. Still working through the details, but that is the intent. But the Army already has someone embedded up with us at Hanscom, and we also have the ability to embed DISA as we move forward if that becomes a demand signal as well.
One last thing comes to mind as you bring up this idea of enterprise IT as a service. How's it going to change the role of the airmen, the people who support, that do IT support today?
The big aspect of this is also, what do our airmen do within the field of information technology service delivery? And going forward, our military and civilian airmen will still have a role, although our vision for this is it would be a decreased role as we require our airmen to be more adversary focused in the space and we need to figure out how we can move them more into defensive cyber operations and mission assurance, and for the primary vehicle of that being our mission defense teams that we're looking to roll out across the Air Force to ensure that we can generate air and space power across the Department of the Air Force. And so that is one of the aspects of that that we're looking forward, is how do we take our workforce along with us. We will still have airmen that will be involved with information technology, but the numbers will decrease, and then also the focus will become more adversary focused and integration of our warfighting capabilities rather than on pure service delivery. But that's something I think is a growth area, and the airmen across the enterprise are very excited about it.
Major General Kevin Kennedy is the Assistant Deputy Chief Information Officer for Digital Transformation at the Air Force. Major General Kennedy, thank you so much for your time.
All right, Mr. Miller, thanks for having me.
We have to take a break. When we return, we shift gears to hear from the Army about their cloud and IT modernization efforts. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. In this part of the show, my colleague Jory Heckman talked with Paul Puckett, the director of the Army Enterprise Cloud Management Office. Jory starts off by asking Puckett about how the Army has adjusted its IT modernization plans and priorities during the coronavirus pandemic.
Our ability to, in real time, adapt, get on the phone, be able to chat with one another, leveraging capabilities like Microsoft Teams. I mean, you just saw the dynamic response from the DoD of there is a mission-critical need for our ability to communicate and collaborate to solve these problems together. And in a matter of weeks, we had over 4 million accounts that were created in a brand new environment, accredited and monitored by security, and people solving problems globally. And so I think Teams and CVR, the commercial virtual remote environment that DoD CIO stood up with the support from Cloud Computing Program Office and a number of entities to include Army's C5ISR for security, obviously DISA, and the collaboration with Cybercom, is when we need to address a problem, we've got the ability to come together, collaborate, communicate, and solve that problem in real time. And there's no requirements document that had an acquisition strategy for compute and storage to accommodate 4 million users globally. It all came down to the dynamic ability of a cloud environment to adapt. And so that's, I think, CVR in COVID-19 is just a beautiful example of how our IT modernization efforts can benefit from this unpredictable world and the ability to have online, on-demand compute and storage resources at the push of a button. And so from an IT modernization perspective, what we saw is a number of components across the Army were already leaning into this methodology for how we leverage cloud computing, how we move to more of a dynamic environment rather than some type of fixed security architecture where we've got to be able to fight from anywhere. And so a lot of initiatives, for instance, Vantage, a cloud-based capability leveraging real-time information from our business mission systems. Vantage was a critical capability for the Corps of Engineers as well as the National Guard to be able to address the logistics challenges of getting PPE and people and even hospitals provided in various environments across the United States for us to be able to respond. That meant new data had to be available in Vantage. That meant that compute for processing that information and storage for all of that information had to be ready on demand. And we didn't find ourselves with a limitation of a procurement process or even a requirements document for contractors being able to accommodate and adapt. We had designed our contracts and our systems leveraging a cloud environment to adapt in real time to an unpredictable world. And so we saw examples of that across the Army, but we also saw the opposite, where typical workflows required somebody to be on a physical camp post or station, required government-furnished equipment, required to be in some fixed location in order to get the job done. And so in those instances, we accommodated, but it really kind of begged the question of what workloads have we been taking these secure and kind of fixed environments for granted with, especially when we introduce this notion of a global pandemic that requires us to work remotely from anywhere. And so the current investments with IT modernization, we saw those initiatives continue to thrive. And then the ones where, we hadn't made those investments or kind of asked those hard questions or invested those resources, we struggled to accommodate in real time to kind of the new way of working.
Just maybe drilling a little bit deeper on that point there, how did cloud services become more essential during the pandemic in this drive to still deliver on mission outcomes? And, you know, to what extent did the organization, did the Army, make greater use of cloud services to maintain mission outcomes?
When it came to, you know, cloud services, obviously the ability to have online, on-demand compute and storage resources were absolutely critical for any new capability that we had to spin up in response to COVID-19. For example, one of the most important things was starting to track people in symptoms and who was where and if they were safe, if they were being quarantined or not. And so we had the ability to build dynamic websites to start to be able to capture that information. But there's some really critical information that we're collecting from our employees. And so you need to ensure that your environment is accredited to be able to handle that information. And so we had already invested in modernizing, leveraging cloud computing, how we manage people information. And it's leveraging the same foundational environment that we're leaning into for the Army's Enterprise Cloud Common Services that we call C-Army. That's little C, big Army. And so our ability to deploy a capability, be able to capture that information, to be able to store and process that information securely, had to lean upon existing investments in the cloud, but then also that dynamic ability to respond and adapt to COVID-19 and new requirements. Those foundations already existed that we could simply build upon in real time, rather than finding ourselves in the acquisition lifecycle to try and accommodate that unpredictable need. And so when we talk about Vantage and our ability to leverage or increase the existing use of cloud services is where we had already made those investments, ingesting new data and delivering new services was critical. And also to include our ongoing efforts for moving to the cloud. One of the initiatives that we had begun before COVID-19 hit was optimizing our ERPs and moving them into a cloud-based environment. And so what we saw is our investment in those environments and the ability to access in a secure way remotely those cloud resources to do that work were critical and were not fixed to our on-premise architectures. And so we just saw going live with that initiative with our ERPs moving to the cloud. And so be able to hold to those timelines and even actually accelerate those timelines to the left were critical from being able to leverage the investments that we had already made and then be able to build upon those investments and those modernization initiatives even during a global pandemic.
What were some of the biggest lessons learned from the Army during the pandemic when it comes to technology acquisition? You know, what about lessons learned as part of the technology implementation as well?
So I think the two complement each other. When it comes to acquisitions and implementation, like I said, no one could have predicted COVID-19. And so when it comes to how we write requirements in contracts, I think it demonstrated that those contracts that left room for achieving an objective and not the explicit steps that needed to be taken in order to achieve that objective were really the ones that were the most resilient to responding to COVID-19 from an acquisitions perspective. And so I think far too often that we work a problem or a requirement so far where we happen to fix in stone the precise way, the precise technology, or even the precise, you know, processes by which that capability has to be brought to bear. And what we find is that when any of the environmental constraints happen to change or any components of the landscape happen to shift, is that those contracts aren't able to adapt in real time. And so where I think it helped the Army realize is that we need to start to write our requirements really as hypotheses that need to be tested, and then to be able to have this kind of this ability to learn from those tests and be able to pivot in how we respond in delivering a capability. And so whether that means some fixed component of an architecture on the technical implementation side of the house is that we don't find ourselves having to predict the future in order to be able to deliver within the timelines, within the budget, and with the actual precision that we're delivering quality capabilities that our soldiers need and want. And so the acquisition side, in my opinion, I think really complements what we see in technological implementation as well. But it also gets to how we fight. I think one of the lessons learned from current technical implementation is there are a number of web-based services that we have across the Army where our only ability to access that capability is from the DOTIN. And a lot of that challenge has to do with the whitelisting process and what should be whitelisted for public internet access. But the other part of that is when we whitelist a website, even if we require authentication and access, you know, what controlled unclassified information are we enabling people to perhaps download onto unmanaged devices? And so there's this kind of this managed risk challenge that has to be understood where our ability to access web-based services from anywhere is critical, but also our thoughtfulness when it comes to what data we're exposing in what environments in context of the mission that's trying to be solved. And so a lot of times we saw where we had to travel on base in order to access critical websites in order to do our jobs, and it begged the question of, should these actually be accessible from the World Wide Web but still require the appropriate authentication in order to use them? And then if those changes needed to happen, has my contract been written in a way to accommodate those changes in real time, or am I now being forced into a new acquisition to get that work done? So from a cloud-based perspective, I think from an acquisition and technology approach is that really software is never done. There's always going to be a changing environment and landscape. And so our ability to adapt in real time in both the contract as well as the technical implementation is absolutely critical.
We have to take a break. Today I'm playing excerpts of a conversation between Paul Puckett, the director of the Army Enterprise Cloud Management Office, and Federal News Network's Jory Heckman. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Today, I'm playing an excerpt of a discussion from my colleague Jory Heckman as he talks to Paul Puckett, the director of the Army Enterprise Cloud Management Office.
How will you ensure that the lessons learned become the norm and are not the exception when it comes to implementing or updating new or current systems and software?
What COVID-19 has taught us is there's nothing that could be like normal or not normal, in my opinion. Like this notion of like this is an emergency and this other thing is not an emergency, I think is really tough nowadays, especially with COVID-19. I mean, just so I'll give an example. You know, our ability to access, you know, a time card and be able to sign it as web-enabled capability, we treat that as kind of this normal thing. But, you know, if we had to come into base in order to sign a time card, simply because it was not web-enabled and accessible from, you know, the World Wide Web, even though it requires, you know, CAC authentication, that would be a major limitation to the way that we just simply function. So I think it's part of these new paradigms, if you will, for how we need to be building capabilities. And so part of the kind of new normal, if you will, is when it comes to implementing new capabilities, we're looking for resilient and adaptive contracts. And this is part of contract language that we're capturing in a cloud smart methodology to leverage cloud-based technologies, and so that we've got kind of that adaptive nature from a compute and storage perspective. Our ability to leverage the common services within those cloud environments, so we start to standardize on how we field and secure IT systems, how we authenticate users to those capabilities. And then we're also seeing a movement in the way that we write contracts for the work to be more agile. So we're seeing a lot of capacity-based contracts. We're seeing a lot of contracts where objectives are being stated, but explicit details of the requirements are not, so that we can give our teams the flexibility to pivot when they need to pivot. And so I feel like those are just kind of the new paradigm that we find ourselves moving towards. And then the ability to, you know, adapt an emergency or non-emergency environment is something that we have the flexibility in the contracts, and we have the flexibility in the infrastructure to accommodate. And so we've drafted that language, and that'll be in all new contracts moving forward. But then that also leads into some of the ways that we enable access to data and information. And so the chief data officer working within CIO G6 also drafted a data services requirements memo. So this is getting into the way that we actually enable access to data of IT systems and how that data needs to be visible, accessible, understandable, trusted, interoperable, secure, or VAUTIS, V-A-U-T-I-S, as we say. And starting to ensure that any new IT system has this adaptability and flexibility with infrastructure, with how they do the work within the contracts, but also the way that they're exposing their data is when we need new data sources, we can tap into that data securely in real time and not find ourselves constrained by the technical implementation or the contract or the infrastructure if we need that information in this unpredictable world.
What challenges did your employees face from the pandemic because of the technology environment? And, you know, are there any good cases or examples of how you and your team helped solve those?
First and foremost, everyone being dispersed at home, our ability to collaborate was limited. And so across the United States Army, we had the ability to increase the number of telephone bridges. We had the ability to increase the number of VPN concentrators. And we had the ability to increase the number of government-furnished equipment that was imaged and issued out to the environment. And so first and foremost, giving people access to devices as well as information and collaboration with each other was critical. We had the ability to accommodate that in real time and scale. But additionally, partnership, like I stated, with the CCPO to deliver the commercial virtual remote environment and enabling unmanaged devices to be able to connect securely and collaborate with partners across the DoD was another critical enabler there. And so our ability to have both government-furnished as well as unmanaged devices, non-GFE, being able to communicate, but then also to get the day-to-day work done was absolutely critical. The response from our Army Enterprise Service Desk, NETCOM, and then our cyber just globally to be able to accommodate was really a key enabler there. When it came to some of the other challenges, government-furnished equipment can only go so far. We saw a lot of changes in configuration to our post-protocol services and management that we had in place. And so how we start to globally respond to securely open up these ports and protocols to be able to pass information in real time were absolutely critical. And the teams were able to crash on those challenges, identify the solutions, and then be able to implement those just simply in a matter of days.
That's all the time we have for today. You just heard excerpts of an interview my colleague Jory Heckman had with Paul Puckett, the director of the Army Enterprise Cloud Management Office. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.